Chapter 20. Misericordia. Taunus stared in horror at his shadow. The bloated, gargantuan figure that he had once been, and would be again. Despair clawed at the edges of his mind as he forced himself to his feet. He felt as if he had been poured dry and wrung out. His strength was all but gone, perhaps drawn into Torglug, and his wings hung silent and dark from his back. He could not see his bow, and his quiver was empty. It was as if Sigmar had reclaimed all the gifts he had once freely bestowed. Torglug stood before Gardas, gloating.
"I am thanking Nurgle for this chance to be settling old scores," he said. "Ironhood the woodsman is not putting down his axe yet. No, no. By and by he will be claiming all of these souls for grandfather."
He spread his arms, axe hanging loosely from his grip. He swung it up to point at Gardas.
"But for now, he will be taking your head to desolation, steel soul."
The words sounded like an insult.
"I do not know how you came to be here, Shade, but it will take more than threats to remove my head."
Gardas lifted his hammer. Blood stained his silver armor, and the thickening mists dragged his limbs down. The despairing dead crowded about him, whispering and clutching at him with insubstantial claws. The Lord Celestine's light wavered, but did not fade. It was only a matter of time, though. His strength was being leached from him by the clutching wraiths, and Torglug was stronger than ever. Taunus looked around. There was no help to be had from the others. They seemed blind to what was happening, as if the miasma had claimed their wits as surely as it was stealing Gardas's strength. Even Morbus was afflicted, his crumpled shape shuddering with convulsions as the wraiths crouched about him. Only Kadok had been unaffected, and he lay unmoving at Torglug's feet. Torglug's axe looped around, carving a path towards Gardas's neck. Gardas blocked the blow, but was knocked off balance by the force of it. Another blow smashed aside his defences, and a third sent him reeling. Torglug drove the haft of his axe into Gardas's chest and knocked him to the deck. Gardas rolled aside as the axe crashed down. The blade became wedged in the deck. Before Gardas could get his feet under him, Torglug drove a meaty fist into his head, dropping him to his hands and knees. Taunus took a wavering step towards his shadow. Torglug spun and pointed.
"Be waiting your turn, little lie. I am returning you to oblivion soon enough."
"No,"
Taunus said. Weaponless, he faced Torglug.
"You are being dead."
"I am being eternal," Torglug said. "While you are living, a seed of me is yet remaining. While Taunus is drawing breath, Torglug is gathering his strength."
He laughed. The sound was like oil spreading across water.
"You are never being free of me."
Taunus lunged, and Torglug caught him by the throat. He lifted Taunus as if he were a child and slammed him down against the deck, splintering the wood. Torglug dragged him up and repeated the process again and again.
"When you are dying here, when your soul is returning to Nurgle's manse, I am being born again. I am rising from you like mushrooms are rising from corpses."
He wrenched Taunus up and held him.
"But I am not killing you yet, little lie. I am wanting you to see what is happening to your new tribe. I am to be slaughtering them, the way I am slaughtering the people of the Everdorn."
Taunus drove his fist into Torglug's head, crumpling the side of his helm. Torglug roared and hurled him to the deck, hard enough to knock the air from his lungs. Osfinis shrieked and dived down. The Star Eagle had been circling above, uncertain as to what was going on. But it understood now. It ripped and tore at Torglug, causing him to bellow in frustration. He swiped at the bird, driving it away. Taunus tried to rise, but couldn't find the strength. He collapsed onto his back. A massive, hoof-like foot dropped onto his chest, pinning him in place. Torglug stretched a hand towards his axe.
Now you are to be watching, as I am taking the head of your new chieftain. Not today, despised one.
Torglug turned. A phlegmatic laugh burbled up.
Is this being a jest?
I am Lord Duke of Festerfane,
Gatrog said, lifting the runeblade in both hands.
And I swore an oath.
Smoke billowed up from between his fingers, and streamers of blue flame crept up his arms as he lunged and drove the blade into Torglug's flabby chest. Torglug screamed in incomprehension and backhanded the Chaos Knight away. Gatrog struck the mast and sank down, stunned. Torglug snatched up his axe and stomped towards the Chaos Knight. Swifter than thought, he buried the pitted blade in Gatrog's chest with a wet thunk.
No!
Taunus flung himself towards his shadow. Torglug whirled. Taunus slammed into him and drove him backwards. Torglug lost his grip on his axe. Taunus caught hold of the hilt of the runeblade.
You are not to be killing me,
Torglug said, clawing at him.
I am. I am killing you this time, filth, as I should have been doing then.
Torglug tried to pry the blade from his chest, but Taunus held it in place. The celestial energy surged through Torglug's bloated frame, burning him up from the inside out. He clawed at Taunus's helm with charring fingers.
No,
he gurgled.
No, not again. Yes, again, and forevermore.
Taunus twisted the blade. He ripped it loose in a spray of superheated bile and turned away from the crumbling shape of his former self.
Go back to the filth that has been spawned you.
A thin scream tripped across the murky air as, for the second and final time, Torglug the Despised passed from the world and into oblivion. The light from the runeblade set the wraiths to fleeing as well. They retreated as the last of Torglug crumbled away to nothing. They would return in time, but for now they had been sated. Taunus quickly made his way to Gatrog's side. The Chaos Knight was broken. Torglug's axe had cleaved him open and shattered the bones in his chest and back. There were some wounds even an infernal resilience could not mitigate.
You are saving me, Taunus said, and Gardas.
Gatrog chuckled wetly and studied his blackened hands.
Yes. It appears that our journey is coming to an end.
He looked at Taunus.
But it has been a pleasure. Such sights have I seen. Such glories. And my honor is upheld.
Taunus sank to one knee beside the dying Chaos Knight.
Why?
He asked.
I swore an oath to aid thee, and so I did.
That is not being the reason.
Gatrog laughed.
Maybe not. Maybe I simply saw a chance to pay my debt.
His laughter choked off into a groan.
I am a true knight, Torglug. That is all I have ever wished to be.
His voice trailed off into silence. Taunus could think of nothing to say as Gatrog coughed, shuddered, and sagged back into death. Slowly, softly, his body came apart like dry fungus. Taunus rose as the blight wind swept the remnants up and carried them away, out over the turgid waters. He turned, runeblade hanging loosely in his hand.
I am not understanding, he said.
Then something Gardas had said came back to him. Mercy was the sharpest blade there was. and for every deed there was a seed that remained. His grip on Gardas's blade tightened. For perhaps the first time, he truly understood those words. He felt a hand on his shoulder and turned. "He died as he lived," Gardas said. "That is all any of us can hope for."
"Could he have been finding redemption?"
Gardas extended his hand. Taunus returned his blade.
"I think, in his own way, he did."
He sheathed the blade and retrieved his hammer.
"And now, it is time we found ours."
The other Stormcasts were slow to recover. Many knelt in prayer, seeking to shore up the foundations of a shaken faith. Some had been wounded in Torglug's rampage and concentrated on binding up their wounds with shreds torn from cloaks and the tattered remnants of the sail. Morbus and Ennio crouched near Cadoc. The Knight Azeros wasn't dead, but that would change soon enough. Blood pooled beneath him, spreading like the folds of a crimson cloak. His warplate had been torn open, exposing the ravaged flesh within. Ennio had recovered Cadoc's beacon, and Taunus could see that its glow was fast fading.
"I failed you,"
Cadoc gasped, as Gardas knelt beside him.
"My faith was not equal to the task, Steel Soul. Forgive me."
"There is nothing to forgive," Gardas said. "You will return to us, with faith and form renewed, soon enough."
Cadoc tried to laugh, but it came out as a gulping cough.
"I pray that it is so. The realms need cleansing, and who better than the Prince of Ekrant to light the fire?"
He sagged, gasping for air to fill lungs that had all but collapsed. Gardas looked at Morbus.
"How long do we have before this place tests us anew?" "For so long as the beacon lasts," Morbus said. His voice was dull with pain. "The power it contains will protect us, but only for so long as it burns. When Cadoc's heart beats its last, so too will the light fade, and we will be defenseless."
"Can you get us moving?" Morbus hesitated before answering.
"If the light is freed from the beacon, it might be enough to propel us to where we need to go. After that, it will be up to us."
"You mean we must shatter the beacon?" Gardas said.
Morbus bowed his head.
"Yes, and such an act may well kill the one who attempts it."
"I will be doing it," Taunus said. "It is being my atonement."
He reached for the beacon, but Cadoc caught his wrist in a vice-like grip.
"No. Give it to me," Cadoc gasped.
He groped for the beacon with his other hand.
"It is my duty, my responsibility."
"I am not certain that I can protect your soul if you perish," Morbus warned.
"My soul needs no protection," Cadoc said. "I am the light of Sigmar's wrath. Let the dark gods burn themselves to ashes in my fire."
At Gardas's nod, Taunus handed him his beacon. Cadoc glared up at him.
"Beware, for I might consume you as well."
"I am being ready," Taunus said, softly.
Cadoc nodded and gripped the beacon in both hands. Slowly but surely, he began to prise it open. The light flared brighter and brighter.
"Say your prayers, Lord Relictor,"
the Knight Azeros growled as he tore the beacon asunder. Morbus heaved himself unsteadily to his feet. The azure cracks in his armor were wider and glowed brightly. A thin shroud of lightning crackled about him as he slammed the ferrule of his staff against the deck.
"Attend me, children of Azir. Listen and obey. Who is it that kneels here before me?"
"Only the faithful," Gardas said.
Taunus and the others echoed him.
"Who shall rise like fire when all is dust?"
"Only the faithful,"
Taunus said as he sank to one knee. The light slipped from the beacon and rose. Morbus gestured, and the light stretched and wavered. It spilled outwards from itself, doubling and redoubling in size and radiance. Taunus could hear the crash of warring stars and the eternal roar of the celestial cascade. Motes that might have been galaxies and nebulae took shape as the light swelled.
Who will carry the light of Azir into the darkness? Only the faithful!
The words flew like arrows. Taunus felt something within him stir in response to the light above. The part of him that had been forged anew by Sigmar's hands, the part of him that was as one with the eternal storm, surged upwards to meet and strengthen the radiance. He could see similar motes of light rising from every stormcast, binding them all to the glow above.
Only through faith can victory be achieved, the Lord Relictor said.
The second canticle of the Hallowed Knights.
Only through faith can it even be conceived.
Morbus stretched his hand upwards, as if to catch hold of the cobalt light. Instead, at his touch, it burst outwards, streaking to every part of the wrecked galley.
Who finds salvation in sacrifice? Only the faithful. Who alone shall stand when all others kneel? Only the faithful. Who shall hold up heaven's foundations at the end of all things? Only the faithful.
Taunus and the others cried out the response as one, and the light became blinding. The deck shuddered beneath his feet as radiant blue flame swept across it. The flames consumed and rebuilt the vessel all in the same moment, and what rose from the mire was a graceful echo of what had been. Where before it had been a thing of brutal angles and serviceable design, it was now a craft fit to ply the celestial seas. Fiery sails swelled with a star-born wind, and the twin-tailed comet flickered across their expanse. Oars of lightning lashed out at the murk below, burning away the miasma and reducing the waters to steam. Morbus, his form wreathed in fire, slammed his staff down once more, and with a peal of thunder, the great vessel began to move. Taunus staggered and sank back, fingers tracing the blackened outline of the twin-tailed comet on his chestplate. All of the stormcast looked as if they had marched through a conflagration. Smoke rose from their armor, and the plumes of their helmets had been reduced to nothing. Taunus could feel the movement of the oars in his bones, and the rush of searing wind against the curve of the hull. It was as if he and the ship were one. He glanced at Enyo in wonder, and she nodded.
I feel it as well, she said. This ship is made from the fire of our faith. It is us, and we are it.
He felt the truth of her words as she spoke them.
It is being Cadoc who is lighting it, though.
He turned and saw the knight Azeroth lying still and silent where he'd fallen. The remains of the beacon lay beside him, its casing warped and shattered. Gardas stood over him, his weapons dangling loosely from his hands. Taunus joined him as Morbus sank down beside the body.
Much is demanded of those to whom much is given, the Lord Relictor intoned, setting his hand on Cadoc's ruined chest.
Morbus still burned. Cerulean flames rose from his battered mortise armor, obscuring almost all of its detail. Even his skull helm was alight, with only the black outline of its shape visible. The flames grew brighter, Taunus noticed, as he drew Cadoc's soul into himself.
Let us just hope that we have something left to give, Gardas said.
Gutrot Spume stood with one foot balanced on the prow of his galley as it slid towards the gates of the inevitable citadel. The upper reaches of desolation were composed of a ring of once proud ruins, which spread out about the passage to the sixth tier of the garden, as if it were a spoke in a wheel. Broken walls rose like tombstones, marking the final resting place of long-buried empires.
A fine place this, eh, Dirk?
The plague-bearer nodded glumly.
Aye, Captain.
Spume chuckled.
This place is a true testament to Grandfather's power.
He gestured expansively towards the ruins they sailed through. This place's name was forgotten to all but a few ancient demon scribes and the eldest of Nurgle's tallymen. The capital of a realm-spanning empire, brought to utter ruin by a contagion that broke down the very bonds between flesh, bone, soul, and mind. That which had resulted had become fertile soil for the Lord of all things. Now, only these few paltry ruins remained, a monument and a warning, both. Put to use, as all things must be, and made over into a bastion of plague. Plague-bearers of the Blighted Legion marched in plodding lockstep through the shallows nearby, their scythed laves resting on their shoulders. They kept a droning count of the deaths they'd inflicted on the mortal realms, naming each and every soul claimed. Industry thrived here, so close to the garden's heart. A thick cloud of black pox smoke rose upwards from the tiers below, choking the air and blotting out all light save that of the balefire torches lining the main boulevard. Vessels slid along flooded side streets, sailing to war. Some went to defend Nurgle's waters, others to conquer new lands in Grandfather's name. Once Spume would have been among them, and soon he would be again.
"You must be proud, Reaver."
He glanced at Urslaug's head hanging from his belt. The witch had been quiet since they'd left the Skaven Warrens.
"And ye must be wondering what I intend to do with ye now, eh?"
He snatched her up and held her at arm's length. She grimaced.
"I know you well enough to know what my fate is.
And yet ye helped me stir the poxwinds in my favor anyway."
If she had shoulders, she would have shrugged.
"Truth to tell, I was getting bored tending my garden."
Spume chuckled. He gestured, and two plague-bearers rolled a wooden cask towards him.
"By way of thanks, your body, as I swore, preserved in canker wine and ready for its head to be reattached."
Urslaug's eyes narrowed.
"You've forgiven me my treachery, then?"
"Did I say that now?"
Spume twitched his axe meaningfully. The plague-bearers lifted the cask with a shared grunt and heaved it over the rail. Urslaug screamed in anger. Spume laughed and swung her head out over the water.
"Make your way back to it if you can, and think on your crimes as you do so. When I return this way again, mayhap you'll have rethought your loyalties, witch."
"The only thing I'd be thinking of is the best way to strip the blubber from your poxy bones, gut-rot Spume,"
Urslaug shrieked. Spume flicked her head after her body and watched it arc up and tumble down, still screaming imprecations.
"Ah, women,"
Spume said, glancing at the plague-bearers.
"Passionate creatures, the lot."
The demons stared at him in incomprehension. Spume waved them off and turned back to his study of desolation. The gates to the sixth tier hung within a massive stone archway, heavy with moss and slime. They were bronze and grotesquely decorated beneath a patina of grime. Legend stated that they were spoils of war, taken from Khorne's realm during the Wars of Blood. Their size was such that it required 100 enslaved souls to haul the dripping chains that set the great opening mechanisms in motion. The souls struggled through deep water, often being submerged entirely as they labored. Nurglings clustered nearby on makeshift rafts of scum and pelted the slaves with mucus and filth. Plague-bearers crouched on plinths of stone overlooking the waters. They jabbed at the struggling souls with rust-limbed spears and halberds, encouraging them to greater efforts. The gates opened with an explosive creak, sending waves surging up over the rails of the galleys. Slaves were swept away, and Nurglings spilled across the water in giggling clumps. Spume thumped the deck with the haft of his axe, signalling his crew. Drums began to thump, and whips hissed as the rowers bent to their task. As the galley passed through the immense gates, Spume heard the thunderous hum of a million flies. Bloated plague drones sped overhead, heading out into the mire. Spume watched them for a moment, then gestured to Dirk.
Go and get our prisoner. He should see this.
Dirk grinned toothily and sloped away. He enjoyed tormenting the Stormcast a bit more than was good for him, but Spume was inclined to be indulgent. After so long, it was almost time to bid the garden and its stultifying boredom goodbye. He turned back and leaned forwards, arm across his knee. Behind the gates, a watery greenish light shone. The light of Grandfather's balefire reflected in the waters that coursed through the entirety of the garden. Unlike the other tiers, desolation was walled off, not simply with stone, but with sorcery. Only those ships blessed by Nurgle, or powerful enough to ignore such enchantments, could safely enter the inevitable citadel. Desolation's wards had only been breached once in its history. The crystal ships of Tzeentch had reached the very walls of Nurgle's manse during the Age of Blood. The wreckage of that fleet still glimmered in the soft light of Grandfather's hearth. Spume felt a pleasing heat as the galley passed through the light. A sound like the rushing of water filled his ears, and for a moment he was blind to all save the gangrenous glow. Then they were through, and sailing along a wide canal. Thick, high walls composed of slime-slick stone rose to either side of the canal. Hunched, toad-like gargoyles with open mouths and bulging eyes crouched atop the walls. They vomited a constant stream of sludgy water into the canal. Oily water vapor billowed upwards in a yellow cloud. Upside-down ramparts crossed above the canal, demons marching in lazy formation across their inverted length. Parapets stretched vertically towards the sky, intersecting with the upturned ramparts, stubby demon engines lining their length. Balefire dripped from the grinning, stylized maws of the fire-throwers, ready to be unleashed upon invaders. The whole of the citadel resembled a child's broken toy, its pieces cast into the air and frozen in mid-tumble. Spume had heard tell that this place had once been more traditional in its structure, but that Nurgle had grown bored. Now jungle creepers thick with insect larvae stretched like a web between the dissociated segments, and strange birds nested in the fat roots that emerged from the cracks in the canal walls. Blossoms of an unhealthy hue floated in the waters, and occasionally Spume caught a glimpse of silvery shapes slipping through the murky depths. Ahead of him, a second gateway waited, guarded by two warriors of the Rotguard. The massive, great unclean ones stood on either side of the canal. They were both clad in battered, disintegrating half-plate armor and full-face featureless helms. Each carried an embossed shield as large as Spume himself, and a flail such as only a gargant could wield. The demons paid no attention to the galley as it slipped between them. Spume watched them warily nonetheless. He remembered Gulax's promise, and had no wish to be caught unawares. The Rotguard were bad enemies to have, whatever the reason. They had much influence in the Court of Ruination in these troubled times. A clatter caused him to turn. Dirk hauled their captive up onto the forward deck, dragging him by his chains. The Stormcast didn't struggle. Spume grunted, somewhat disappointed. This was going to be no fun if all the fight had been beaten out of him. He set his axe over his shoulder and gestured with a tentacle.
Welcome to the inevitable citadel, shiny skin. It will be the last place you ever see.
Grim looked around, blinking against the sudden, painful light. The galley had sailed into what looked to be a vast stone amphitheatre of irregular shape and proportion. Canals ran crookedly through its heart, issuing from a septet of gateways. Haphazardly placed wooden beams rose against the oddly bulging walls, as if holding them in place. Monstrous roots erupted from beneath the paving stones and squirmed in all directions. Colossal statues, obscene in their construction, stood or squatted atop equally large plinths of onyx, marked with weeping sigils. Balefire torches and blighted lanterns cast a sickly glow over everything, and in their light the statues seemed to twitch and grimace. Demons moved like insects among the roots and scuttled through the shadows of the statues. Some wore armor, Others were clad in ill-kept finery. All seemed to have their own purpose and went about it. Unseen bells tolled throughout the amphitheater as the galley slid alongside a fungal wharf, thick with chattering nurglings and swarms of flies. At the center of the amphitheater, the waters of the canals drained down into an abyssal cistern through a series of grates shaped like the maws of great beasts. The rim of the cistern was nearly flush with the floor of the amphitheater, and from its mouth, a thick black cloud of smoke rose upwards continuously. Overhead, more support beams, each as wide around as two men, crisscrossed the open air. From them hung thousands of tarnished and befouled icons. Most were recognizable. The runes of Khorne, Slaanesh, and even the horned rat were in evidence. Captured banners rustled in the smoky air, flapping against hundreds of iron gibbet cages, each containing a broken, huddled form.
"The Corsair kings of the Cerulean seas," Spume said, looking up. "Sorcerers and witches, bound to the whims of the Architect of Fate, and now caged for eternity, at Grandfather's pleasure."
"Your kind has ever warred against itself," Grimm said.
"Not my kind. They were weak."
Spume lifted Grimm's chin with the flat of his axe.
"As ye are weak, but I am strong, and will be stronger still when I am returned to Gairan."
He rotated the axe, letting its edge scrape against Grimm's chin and throat.
"Maybe they'll let me have your skin to hang from my mast."
"Come and take it, if you think you can," Spume laughed.
"Still some fight in ye, eh? Good. I was worried you were going to make this no fun at all."
"Would that I had control of your mouth, as I do your limbs," Bubonicus hissed.
Grimm frowned. A wave of weakness passed through him, and he spat out a squirming maggot. Spume crushed it beneath his foot.
"There aren't many as could endure the maggot curse so long. He must be about hollowed out by now."
Grimm said nothing, too busy trying to control the surge of bile that rushed through him. Memories, not his own, crowded against his thoughts, making it hard to focus. Bubonicus had redoubled his efforts, desperate to conquer Grimm's will before they reached desolation. Gradually, he'd lost control of his limbs, of his body. He could feel maggots squirming within him, smothering him from the inside. Pain radiated through his bones as they gnawed steadily away. His prayers had kept them at bay, but not for much longer.
"Our battle is soon done," Bubonicus whispered. "But not yet," Grimm muttered, as Derg flung him to the deck.
The demon planted a warty foot between his shoulders and held him down.
"And if you have any hope of victory, you will leave me be."
Bubonicus fell silent. Whatever else he might be, the creature was no fool. His fate was tied to Grimm's for the moment. Grimm blinked sweat and blood out of his eyes. He tried to focus on Spume. The Rotbringer sank to his haunches.
"There are matters yet to settle between us before I hand your carcass over."
"To your masters, you mean?"
Spume made a sound halfway between a growl and a laugh.
"Call them whatever ye like. Makes no difference to me. But I will have my just due of you."
"Hardly a fair fight," Grimm said, glaring up at him.
"I'm not interested in fair."
Spume waved Derg back.
"But I will give you one last chance to draw blood, if you like."
"A trick. He intends to humiliate you, to break you."
"I know," Grimm said, heaving himself to his feet. Bubonicus made no attempt to stop him, though Grimm couldn't say why.
"Still talking to that rotten seed, eh? Well, pay attention."
Spume spun his axe and drove the haft into Grimm's stomach. He staggered back and felt Derg's lash kiss his back. It couldn't cut through his armor, but the force of the blow dropped him to one knee. More plague bearers crowded around, carrying cudgels and whips. They struck at him from all sides, and the thorns of the whips tore ragged gashes in his face.
Whoever ye are in there, ye chose the wrong body to usurp. Bad luck, that.
Spume thrust himself through the knot of plague-bearers and used his tendrils to batter Grim, knocking him sprawling.
Good luck for me, though. Kept him weak, kept him from escaping. I should thank ye.
He struck Grim in the side of the head, causing his world to spin.
But in truth, I was hoping for more of a challenge.
Arrogant brute, to torment a captive so. And for what?
Spume caught Grim in the chest with a kick and sent him rolling across the deck. He wheezed, trying to catch his breath. Something inside him was broken. The maggots were agitated. They squirmed from the wounds on his face and plopped to the deck. He tried to push himself up, but Bubonicus held him tight.
Surrender, and I will see him off, Loras. I will take his head and cast it at the feet of his masters. Surrender.
No,
Grim said. Something pressed against his eyes from behind. He was blind. Maggots filled his mouth, his lungs. His heart strained against a shroud of squirming bodies. He felt something grip his soul in iron claws and threaten to rend it to pieces.
Surrender, damn you! I will not perish at the hands of a worthless braggart!
More memories. A young knight riding through a sweetly scented garden beside a fair lady, her face hidden behind a veil. Of the burning, bitter taste of the sacred waters of Nurgle's own broth. Of the strength and the glory of a life well lived in service to a dark god. Vile images spattered across his consciousness like acid, but all with one common theme. Despair. Surrender. And that Loras Grim could not do.
I am the shield of the faithful,
he grunted, forcing the words out.
I am the rock upon which the faithless break.
Whips hissed. Cudgels fell. New pain blossomed amid the old.
I will die before I give up.
You will, won't you? Never have I met a soul so stubborn. Your very marrow a swarm with maggots, and still you fight. Still you resist. Why?
I have my honor,
Grim whispered. Bubonicus fell silent. And then feeling flooded Grim's limbs. A whip snapped out, and he raised a forearm. The lash tightened about his bracer, and he grabbed hold of it, jerking its wielder close. Durg grunted in confusion as Grim's fist connected with its eye. The demon screamed as its eye burst, and Grim's fist continued on, erupting out of the back of its skull. He ripped his arm free and shoved the dissolving body away.
If you want me to fall, you'll have to do better than that.
He pushed himself to his feet. He felt feverish. His joints ached and his stomach churned. But he had control of himself again. He raised his chain, ready to meet Spume's charge.
You are brave, Loras. I am proud to know you.
Quiet!
Grim snarled.
Ye can barely stand, Spume said.
He spun his axe with an easy grace.
Barely, Grim said. And yet, here I am.
He pulled the chain taut.
Not for long.
Spume stomped towards him, axe raised.
I'll deliver you to the Lord of all things, in pieces, if I must.
The axe swept down.
Now!
At Bubonicus's warning, Grim pivoted. He cast a loop of chain about the axe as it fell. He twisted aside, hauling the weapon out of Spume's hand and sending it whirling towards the mast. The massive blade slashed through ropes and chains before embedding itself in the slime-slick wood. Spume roared and launched himself at Grim. The Lord Castellant attempted to wrap his chain about the Rotbringer's throat, but Spume was quicker than he looked. His tentacles snared the chain and jerked Grim off balance. The Stormcast leaned into the fall, tackling his tormentor off the upper deck. They crashed down among the rowers' benches, scattering the souls there. Grim felt new strength flood him as he drove a fist into Spume's head, denting the pirate's helm.
"What are you doing?"
he demanded.
"Helping. I cannot defeat you, so I will lend my sword to your cause."
"I need no help from you."
Spume reached up and caught him by the head.
"Take what you can get, shiny skin."
He drove his skull into Grim's, knocking him back. Spume rose, shaking off bits of broken bench. Grim snatched up a wide chunk of wood and struck the Rotbringer. Spume stumbled, and Grim hit him again. The wood came apart in his hands. Spume roared and lunged, groping for his throat.
"The Kraken, Loras! Strike the Kraken!"
Grim ducked beneath Spume's lunge and made a grab for the snapping beak. Tentacles entwined about him, but he caught the lump of muscle and clacking mandibles and gave it a wrench. Spume screamed shrilly. Grim twisted the struggling mass and hauled Spume around bodily. He caught sight of plaguebearers closing in on them, coming to aid their captain. It was time to end this. He forced the pirate to his knees and swiftly looped the chains around his throat.
Now we come to it," Grim said.
He twisted the chains, tightening the improvised noose.
"You wanted a reckoning. Here is your reckoning."
Spume clawed at the chains, trying to free himself. Grim drove his knee into Spume's back. Something snapped and Spume gurgled. He flopped forwards, yanking the chains from Grim's grip. He writhed on the deck like a dying fish, slobbering curses. Before the plaguebearers could react, Grim was among them. He barreled towards the mast. When he reached it, he ripped Spume's axe free and beheaded the closest plaguebearer. Whirling the axe about, he chopped through limbs and weapons alike, forcing the demons back. Grim fought his way back towards Spume, intending to remove the creature's head with his own axe.
"Hold!"
The word echoed in the sudden silence. Grim turned, panting. The galley's arrival had drawn a crowd. A phalanx of plaguebearers slouched towards the ship, accompanied by something far worse than they. The great unclean one was enormous, far larger even than Bolothrax had been. It sat slumped atop a massive palanquin, borne aloft by hundreds of mutilated souls. Their broken, disease-ridden forms were bound together by rusty chains and fraying ropes. They were bent beneath thick, roughly hewn logs upon which the palanquin rested. The demon wore what appeared to be robes of state beneath the dirt and mould. Its flesh spilled through great rents and ragged tears in the robes, as if it had outgrown them over time. A tarnished gorget of beaten bronze squeezed tight about its flabby neck, and it wore an ornate breastplate of the same, marked with unpleasant agricultural motifs, unnatural grains waving against bloated moons, and pockmarked scythes. Thick, scaly fingers were draped over the heavy pommel of an enormous sword, which rested between the demon's bandy legs. Seven crooked antlers sprouted from its round, toad-like skull. They rose up and met above its head to form the tripart rune of Nurgle. A monocle of cracked, discolored glass rested in the folds of one beady eye.
"Father Decay," Bubonicus whispered, "the hand of Nurgle himself, Lord High Admiral of the Plague Fleets. Loras, you must surrender now, or both our souls are forfeit."
Grim shook his head, trying to focus.
"No. If you surrender now, you will live on in me. But if you do not, I... No. No." "Is that the maggot of chivalry I hear scrabbling in my prize? How came you here, champion of worms?"
The demon's voice cut through Grim like a rusty blade. His stomach heaved, and he blinked back tears of blood.
"Have you resorted to theft of another's crop, or is it mere happenstance?"
The demon shrugged.
"No matter."
Father Decay gestured, and Bubonicus screamed. Grim screamed with him, for the pain was unbearable. He felt as if he were burning up from the inside out. Smoke spewed from his paws, nose, and mouth, coalescing above him into something that might have been a face. The demon chuckled.
Bubonicus, a handsome lad in your day. It is no wonder my dear cousin was so enamored of you. But all things end, save that which grandfather wishes to continue. Your time is done, your battles won and lost.
The smoke began to dwindle, congealing as it did so, shrinking into a solid, smooth marble, the color of gangrene. It floated into the waiting palm of Father Decay. The demon removed its monocle, spat on it, and returned it to its place, before closely examining all that remained of Bubonicus.
Yes, handsome indeed. Perhaps I shall return you to your sweet lady as a token of my esteem.
As it dropped the marble into its robes, it turned its attention to Grimm.
And now, for you. Long have I waited for you.
Grimm stumbled. The axe slipped from his nerveless fingers as the creature's gaze pierced him to his very soul.
You are a riddle without an answer. A soul plucked from the grasp of its rightful owners by a thief and a coward. You are a poison cup, a prize to be claimed, but fatal to possess.
The words punched into him, stealing the ebbing strength from his limbs. He fell back against the mast, unable to draw a steady breath.
Aye, he is a prize. Mine.
Spume had got to his feet. He reached for his axe.
I brought him to you, demon. I have done as you asked.
Commanded,
Father Decay rumbled. Spume twitched and pressed on.
Where is my reward?
Father Decay was silent for long moments. Then it sighed.
And what do you want, Lord of Tentacles? What reward will satisfy a soul as greedy as yours?
Before Spume could speak, the demon raised a hand for silence. A plague drone hummed around Father Decay's head, and its rider leaned close to whisper in its master's ear. When the message had been delivered, the greater demon leaned back and laughed, low and long.
You want a reward, do you? Well then, here is your chance to double it, Corsair. Our guests have arrived at last, much diminished in number, but still shining with the light of their cursed faith. Go, Spume, bring them to me, and I shall reward you more handsomely than even you can conceive.
The demon flung out a hand, indicating the gateway. Grimm laughed, though it hurt. Spume's hand tightened on the haft of his axe. The kraken beak in his side snapped and squalled, and his tentacles thrashed. But only for a moment. Then they stilled, and Spume straightened.
So say ye, demon, but fair warning. I can conceive of a great deal indeed.